Everybody, and welcome back to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of AZA's Bear Tag. My name is Emily, and along with Lisa, we're so excited to be talking all things bear with you all. Today, we are so excited to be continuing our deep dive into bear husbandry, and we have a really special guest. Craig, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Awesome. And before we dive into today's topic, could you tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got started in the zoo field, and if you have a favorite bear species?
Sure. So my name's Craig Gibbs. I'm the assistant curator at the Queen Zoo, and I got started in the zoo field through education at the Bronx Zoo way back in the 90s, and I worked through their education department there. And then I came back to the Bronx Zoo in 2006 to be a curatorial intern for the special animal exhibits. And then I moved to Queens, where I've been a curator there for 15 years. Definitely have a favorite bear species, and that would be the Andean bears.
That is so great. We heard from Sarah Colandrea last season about the Andean Bear SSP, and I know we have definitely a lot of big Andean Bear fans, so it's so cool that we have another. And you do have bears at the Queen Zoo, right? Can you talk a little bit about like which species we'll be talking about today?
Yeah, so we have Andean bears. Our zoo at Queens is all North and South American species. We specialize in the New World bears, and we also decided since 1993 that we would focus on Andean bears. We don't deal with any North American bears. We instead have gone with the South American endemic bears, the Andean bears. So, like I said, we've had them from 19 since 1993. But starting in 2016, we started producing cubs, which has been probably one of the highlights.
Okay, wow, that is a really in-depth history taking care of one singular species like that. That's really cool. And Andean bears, our listeners may or may not know, and especially if they listen to season one, probably get an idea, talking to Sarah and the SSP, everything that goes on with there, that, Andean bears are not a bear you see in every single zoo. So for you to have had that long history taking care of Andean bears probably has given you a pretty good wealth of knowledge in terms of just general Andean bear husbandry.
Taking care of them as long as we have. And we've also been fortunate to have a couple of keepers who have been here since almost the beginning. So we have our primary keeper is Raul Vasquez. And so he's been working with these bears for well over 20 years. He's traveled down into South America and has done some work with keepers down in South America in husbandry techniques and dealing with Andean bears as well. It's interesting because you hone your husbandry skills. We know what they need, and we know what what they require nutritionally. We know what they like on their exhibit and stuff. But really, the first time we had cubs, it was almost a complete surprise. We had no idea really what to expect, and our dens were not set up for cubs. And so, sometimes there's the science of husbandry, but it also requires a little bit of luck.
I feel like that's just kind of life in general sometimes, just sometimes a little bit of luck can really get you far. No, that's really cool. And I like the way that you understand that, like you said, there's the science there, but there's just a wealth of experience and what you gain just from that experience. So even though it was a surprise and but a little bit of luck and gaining experience can get you so far. And so mentioning that, you had your first cubs in 2016. So, let's dive into that a little bit. So, when it comes to knowing that you have a female who is pregnant, how does that husbandry change? Because bears are pretty unique just in general, when it comes to reproduction and their behaviors. So, how did things change when you got a breeding pair and a pregnant female?
I think it was one of those things where, like our keepers were begging us to get to pair up our female, Nicole. Like we need a male. We want to breed. We want to have cubs. And then when we actually got the male in and, we were breeding, I think they were like, okay, this is great. We're doing it. But when you get bear cubs on the ground, you have that moment of panic, like, oh my gosh, now what do we do? So stepping back. Basically, it's just making sure that you're introducing the bears and that you're making sure that they have had good introductions that have gone well before you let them in the exhibit together. You kind of have to have a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen and when you're going to intervene and when you're not. And we've been really lucky that usually see when you introduce them a lot of chasing, which can be kind of intimidating to the female because, you know, especially our female was outweighed by our male by like 250 pounds. And so when you have this big beast chasing you around the exhibit, you not really want to sit still for him and you know, let him come over because, you know, he's huge. So, you know, one of the things that we did then was we just kind of made sure that we were watching for any changes in the female's behavior, development of mammary glands and things like that. But to be honest with you, we really didn't know what to expect. It's there haven't been a lot of births, and the way our exhibit was set up and the way our holding was set up, the denning area we couldn't observe. It was she had chosen to go behind this 3/4 height wall. You know, if you were going to design a bear birthing den, you would never do what we did, you know, and it was one of those things where we're like, okay, well, this is what we got. The real big signal is that usually about 4 or 5 days before giving birth, the female will be really interested in nesting materials. You'll see her dragging stuff from the exhibit into holding. She'll lose interest in food. She might even lose interest in going outside. And then she'll start denning up real hard where she won't come out. And like I said, from behind the wall, what we were forced to do is we had set up a tape recorder and listen overnight to hear if we, to listen if we heard babies whining or squealing. And they can be, you know, they can be pretty loud. So we would, you know, usually the big thing was that we would try to figure out if we had one, two. And in the case just most recently, we had three.
That is so cool. I think that really speaks to, you know, just the amount of faith that you and your team had, both like in your bears as well as your ingenuity. I think the idea of like listening in the recordings is so cool to find like a little workaround to the den box issue. I think that's just really speaks to how creative zookeepers and animal care teams have to get. So that's really wonderful. And just to backtrack a little bit, I was wondering, you said Nicole was one of your bears. Do you have any other bears currently at the Queen Zoo?
Right now we have three cubs. We lost our male about, well, it was just about a year ago. And so right now we just have the lone female, Nicole, who's has three cubs, which is very rare. Usually it's a single. Our first cubs was a single male. Then we've had two pairs of twins, and at this time we've had two boys and a girl. Right now they don't have names yet. They've just went on exhibit for the first time a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, so now that right now it's mom, kiddos, they're just now coming out. You know, you more than doubled the bear population at the zoo. And as with any young animal, there's a lot of energy there, there's a lot of individuality. So how in the husbandry world, I would assume there's training that goes on with mom and just in her, you know, day to day and things that go on for her care. So, what does that husbandry and that care kind of look like now that you've got a new mom who's, you know, nursing cubs and these little guys that, you know, are growing and learning so much?
You try to just get the cubs to be used to the keepers, and you try, you know, very, very rudimentary, just coming up and getting interested in what the keepers are doing. A lot of times we'll do some simple targeting with the mom and they'll watch. So they kind of get an idea, oh, you know, and then they'll take interest in like the target pole. And so, you know, you kind of just start with getting them used to you. And there's not a lot to do in the very first bit because, you know, we usually keep the cubs in holding for the first 3 months. And so, because we want them to get some size and stuff, but I mean, you can imagine after 3 months, Nicole's ready to just, I mean, she's like, get me out. I want out. We thought two was a lot. You know, you've got three cubs climbing all over the place. And so it's pretty chaotic. And once they get back out into the exhibit for the first time, then you have to, you know, you're worrying about like, okay, hot wire. They have to test the hot wire. So that's one of the first things. And almost invariably, all cubs will go to the highest point in the exhibit and climb up there and then look like they're going to fall for the next hour and a half. And you just hold your breath. And that's one of those things where I can imagine it's the same thing with parents. When we had our first cub, this thing couldn't sneeze without us. Be like, uh-oh, we better call the vets. That was a sneeze. Did you hear a sneeze? We heard a sneeze. That was definitely a sneeze. Was he eating? We don't know. By the triplets, you're like, ah, look at them. They're fine. Because you kind of learn that, okay, these guys are kind of indestructible when they're young. You watch them fall off of things where before you might have been like, call the vets. He just fell 4 feet off the log and he landed on, and you watch him fall now and you're like, look at him roll. He's just bouncing down, So I think there is that learning curve that goes into it. And then as we go forward, we'll start figuring out things that they're liking and things that they like to do. And we'll start trying to incorporate some of those things into their training.
That's really cool. I love that you kind of rely on the mom to really do that introductory teaching, because that's how it would be, with any bear, they have to learn from their mom how to do all of these things. And so being able to start that husbandry through her, I think is really cool. And something that people may not realize that, that trust, that relationship between the keepers and mom can extend to the kiddos too, I think is really cool. And yeah, I think you're spot on with first cub versus fourth litter, third litter. It's like, we got this. We know how to do this. Now, you may have said this and I don't remember, but Nicole was, how many litters or kiddos has she had?
We've kind of had an embarrassment of riches at Queens. We've had over since 2016, 8 cubs born. You spoke to Sarah, the SSP coordinator. So we're very popular with Sarah because she loves that we're putting bears out there. The problem is with the population where it's at right now, we represent a fair amount. If there's, 33 bears and we represent 8 of them, it's kind of, she's like, okay, I need bears in other places too to start doing this. So, yeah, and getting back to one of the things that I really think it helps our keepers building trust with the animals that they work with, because I've, and I don't know, I might just be reading into this, but at least twice when Nicole has had babies and had cubs, she will bring them out. We hear them and we know that they're there, but we're just, she's behind the wall, she's doing her thing and stuff. But there's been like almost, the last 2 litters for sure, she'll bring out one or two and just show you, just walk up, show you, and then she'll back in and that's it. So it's almost, kind of like, look, here's what I got, and I think, we got lucky with Nicole. She's just a great mother and very, very mellow when we have to do things. So I, like I said at the very beginning, I think a lot of it is luck, but it's also just having our keepers just have such a great relationship with these bears.
Sounds like Nicole is just like a really great mom. And I think it really speaks to the trust that you and your team have built with her, that she feels so comfortable showing the babies and really working to help make sure all those husbandry techniques are still being worked on and performed while she has like the cubs and helping to build that trust as well. I know you mentioned they've had 8 cubs since 2016. Are any of those cubs, they're not at the Queen Zoo? Are they at other zoos across the country? Or like, do you get to follow up on like the different litters?
Yeah, we've had 8 babies or 8 cubs born. And right now we have cubs at Syracuse, cubs that were at Brownsville, at Smithsonian, Cleveland. We have one now in Bridgeport at the Beardsley Zoo. So yeah, we're spreading out the Nicole's offspring all across the country. And I think and the Andean bear community is a pretty tight-knit community, and there's a lot of talk that goes on and people, helping each other out. Like Beardsley Zoo is not too far away from us. It's maybe an hour and a half drive. So we went up there and they just built a new exhibit. So we helped them with that. Based on our holding area, we told them exactly what not to do. And so they built this beautiful new facility and stuff. And so it's been really nice to have them come on board and also know that we have one of our bears just, an hour and a half drive away that we can, go up and see how she's doing. And so she'll be paired with a male coming up sometime in the future for breeding as well.
That's awesome. And yeah, I know one of the really common themes that we've had throughout season one and season two is just community between different AZA accredited facilities and really kind of like connecting, helping each other to advance animal well-being and conservation. And I think that the relationship that you have with the Beardsley Zoo really speaks to that. It must be so nice just having like a neighbor right in your own backyard to be able to bounce Andy and Bear ideas and theories off. And especially since you've had so much great luck with cubs, hopefully they'll get that kind of same luck with one of your cubs and whoever that partner is.
Okay, so I have to ask, and knowing that some of our listeners might not be as familiar with typical practices when young animals are born, when baby animals are born, you have three cubs, and I mean, we could do a whole season just on bear biology. But for those that don't know, when bears are born, they're born very tiny, relatively helpless, and rely a lot on time spent very close with mom before they're big enough to, you know, move around more and open their eyes and do all of that. So since, you know, you're relying on your hearing for Nicole, and thankfully she comes out to show you, but how long is it before, you know, you get a good look on them? Is there ever a time where, you know, vets need to look and do any vaccinations or tests or anything like that on the cubs? So how long does that kind of process kind of take?
Looking back, we usually will know that there was a birth because we'll start to hear the noises. If we're really good and patient, we'll get to hear suckling. So, we'll go, okay, we can confirm that they are suckling and getting nutrition. Before they go outside, they will be seen by the vets three different times. And the first time is, I would say, I'd have to look back, but maybe a month and a half after they're born. And that will just be a quick PE where, because usually that's the first time they've been separated from Nicole. And she usually, usually have to be quick because, the young bears don't know really what's happening. So they're not a problem and they're small. So you can pick them up, we'll confirm sex, just kind of give them a quick PE. They have a vaccination start, there's some that might be a three round. One vaccination and two boosters or something. They'll start that. And then we'll watch them real quick to make sure that there's no reaction from that. And they'll get two more of those visits coming up. And it's usually the third visit is usually the roughest because at that point, it's amazing at how fast they grow because they'll go from small, little, I guess maybe the size of maybe a small prairie dog, very, very small. And then, there'll be these 15-pound balls of fury, that you have to go in there and, you're looking at them like, okay, how bad can this be? And they will put up, you scruff them and they start screaming. It's loud. And then Nicole's like, what are you doing? So usually that last one is quick because you're like, all right, get them. Let's put them down. So yeah. And then we'll get them outside and that will be usually Sarah's moving these bears around pretty quickly. So then the next time we'll really have our hands on them might be for like a pre-shipment check, where then we'll do full rads and get a blood sample. And that will be an immobilization procedure. So we don't do anything immobilizing until we know where they're going to go. We've been very lucky with that. There is some infant mortality amongst Andean bears, and we've been very lucky. We did have one young female that had to go to the Bronx, and that was interesting because we're taking a young bear away from the mother to get it up to the Bronx because we weren't really sure what was going on. We think that she might have possibly eaten something outside, but she was lethargic and stuff. And so we got her up to the Bronx. Got her some fluids. We checked her out. She was fine. But then came the whole, well, now we have to put her back. And, nobody had ever done that before where they had taken a bear away. And again, I don't know if it's just luck. I'd like to say it was the great skill of our keepers and ourselves. It was a very easy process too. So, I think there is those things when you're doing these medical interventions where you have to have a good plan. And then, execute and then fall back on it and just make sure that you're ready for, as impossible as it is, you try to be ready for everything. And, you just, because you never know what you're going to get. Like we were saying earlier, the first thing they do is they climb up to the highest thing they can, and then they look like they're going to fall. So, they did that the first cub we had. And then for the second, for the rest, the other seven, We just completely throw straw bales all over the place out there, even though we know we probably don't need it. It just all makes us feel better because we know they're going to fall at some point.
No, that's really cool. And that really, again, speaks to that trust and that relationship that's built between the bears and their keepers. So, Nicole having the trust that even though, separating a mom from cubs is not always everybody's favorite thing to do, but to be able to do to keep the cubs healthy and to make sure they get everything they need, her having that trust that, everything's going to be okay and stay as calm as possible through that is really, really cool. And I wouldn't say it's luck. Honestly, I know enough bear keepers out there to know that bear keepers are an awesome group of people that are so dedicated to the animals that I am not surprised that you guys have had so much success and that so much has gone well with the Andean bears there because it is just bear keepers are a great group. They know what they're
Yeah,
doing.
and being in my position, I get to succeed when they succeed, and so, I am fully cognizant of the fact that my success is based purely on the skill and the expertise of the keepers. And I just get to sit back and be like, yeah, look what we did. And I'm sure there's times where the keepers are going, what we are you talking about?
Yeah. And I was wondering, can we look a little bit kind of towards the future? So, you have the cubs now, they're outside, they're kind of doing their thing, they're able to explore their habitat. I know you mentioned at some point they're going to be kind of graduating and moving on to zoos of their own once they're of age. But what's kind of the immediate future and maybe like eventually down the line look like for them?
They'll spend at least a year with their mother and with the all four of them out on exhibit. And then I think, it's really interesting because I'm sure Sarah gave everybody a really good idea of what's going on with the SSP and Andean bears. And, there's going to be some decisions that will need to be made in terms of how we go with these three specifically. We have one female who will be semi-valuable. She's got a lot of sisters and brothers out there. Being a female and being able to breed and coming from a female bear that's been so prolific and such a good mother, you'd want to kind of encourage that. You'd want to say, okay, that's something when we want to really take and propagate and keep. I can definitely see the two boys, going to somewhere and being together, giving somebody a interesting and exciting new exhibit because, usually when you get a Andean bear, they're solitary, so you get one. I don't see any reason why we couldn't send both these males to one zoo, and just having two bears out on exhibit is a lot better. There's a lot more interaction. They've grown up together, so I can see that as a real possibility, especially as we move forward and more zoos want Andean bears because of their conservation story and because of their uniqueness and stuff. I think they have a really good future of being an ambassador going to a zoo, and it's a great example where you can keep two boys together and have a great exhibit for years and years and years.
That's really cool. And again, another great example of husbandry within zoos, that expertise, that knowledge base to know that that is an option, when you have two brothers that they could potentially stay together for a while. And that's really cool. And what about you, Craig? Like you said, you've been doing this a long time. What does the future look like for you?
So I'm actually now at the Prospect Park Zoo in Brooklyn. I took the assistant director curator job here. It was a tough decision because it was animals that I really enjoyed at Queens. We had kind of the North and South America megafauna. We had mountain lions and we had, the Andean bears and we had bison and stuff. I really enjoyed that, but at Prospect it's a completely different collection. Like what I tell people is that at Queens, I had like maybe 250 animals that averaged like 250 to 300 pounds. At Prospect, I have like 600 animals that average 5 pounds. So it's a completely different group of people and stuff. And like I'd said with the bear keepers, I fully understand and realize that my success was based on the great staff I had at Queens. And one of the things that happened at Prospect was that we underwent a big flood. It wiped out our infrastructure. We had no power, no electricity or anything for going on 8 months. We were shut down. I came over to help the animal department, and it wasn't, I think it was one of those things where watching the keepers that we had go through what they went through really inspired me to be like, okay, this is another group of people that I really want to work with and work with and work on new things, you know, especially for me, I have a lot to learn here. So I think, you know, moving forward, I've always been telling the keepers here, we got to raise some money so maybe we can get some Andean bears at Prospect Park in Brooklyn. So, you know, and they're psyched to try to do that. But in the meantime, you know, one of the things that we do here is we do a lot of small cat things. We have like sand cats and palace cats and black-footed cats and stuff. So there's new challenges and stuff, and I'm really enjoying the opportunity that I have. And the crew, again, I've been really lucky to have another great keeper staff, and the expertise they have has been really, really, really informative for me to learn, and I've learned a lot.
Well, that's such a wonderful opportunity for you. I really hope that everything goes smoothly as you integrate into your team. And it's really nice to know that you have your Andean bears just nearby too, even though it's at a different zoo. And yeah, I feel like we're kind of starting to come to a close with our episode. I guess, do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about your career working at zoos, about Andean bears or cubs?
I love this format. I love being able to talk about, you know, what it is that we do. And, you know, even though if the audience is people that already do what we do in bears and in husbandry and stuff like that, I think it's really important that we share this information and we continue to communicate like this, because, you know, I really think that it's through these kind of things that you learn things and you're able to kind of take those next steps forward, you know, because like I said, I would never have designed a bear den for birthing like we have at Queens, but yet we've made it work and we've learned a lot. So I think, you know, stuff like this is really, really great. So I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you taking the time to come on and just share all about your experience working with Andean bears and cubs. And hopefully if you guys are able to get Andean bears at Prospect, we'll get to have you on again. And thank you also so much to all of our listeners who took the time to listen to this episode today. If you'd like to find more Bear in Mind, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you want to learn more about the Bear Tag, you can visit us on social media, on Instagram at AZA Bear Tag, or on Facebook as Bear Tag. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!